The Fan.
Minnesota. Well, hello, and welcome to the Friday football. What's going on? Let's feast on a Friday. Jared Wells is the technical guidance. That's Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. And I'm Paul Allen. This is the Friday football feast in front of a game against the Detroit Lions that you will hear at noon, FM 100.3, KFAN. It's your favorite station. And you don't have to do this to appease us here because we're of the, at least most of us are of the thick skin variety. But when I say that, your favorite station, KFAN, make noise if KFAN is your favorite radio station. You ain't got to fake the funk. Oh, wait. Oh, shucks. So you ain't got to fake the funk, okay, just to, like, appease us. So let's try it again. Because it felt good. Is your favorite radio station FM 100.3 KFAN? Can I get a witness? Hey, more T-shirts. What's going on? The 9 to noon radio show is Learn. And Jared Wells and I were both in Philly. He's the technical guidance for the vast and ever-expanding KFAN, Minnesota Vikings Radio Network. We were both there for the Philly flop. He was there in 2017 for that Philly flop in the NFC title game after the Minneapolis Miracle. And we begin with this. When our favorite team, Charch, flops in Philadelphia, it leaves a different kind of sting. It's like when you play, when you win or you lose against the Eagles, here, there, or anywhere, that's one thing. But when you flop against the Eagles like Monday Night Football, at least for me, it leaves a different kind of sting. It's kind of like it's like that 2017 season NFC title game, you know, where Rudolph scores front left of the end zone. We take the lead and ain't no stopping us now. Copyright Philly band McFadden and Whitehead. And then we get killed. But 2017, the NFC title game, not that you would know, Charge, but I mean, it still felt.
I was here for that.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, you got back for that?
I was home for that.
Yeah, it just feels different. You know what I mean?
Well, the bad part about losing to Philly, and especially in that fashion, is it emboldens an already brash fan base.
Right.
That brash is about the nicest thing I can say about that fan base.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, all it does is make everything we hate about that fan base worse. Yep. and embolden them to be the a-holes that they are. And that's the, you know, that's the part that I hate about getting beaten by Philly, especially in this fashion, is now you get, you got it next time around when you got to face Philly. And I do believe these teams have a very good chance of meeting again this year.
Really?
Oh, yeah, baby. Eagles are going to the playoffs, and the Vikings, I still believe, have an excellent chance of going to the playoffs. So they're going to meet again. We're going to have to tangle with the same damn fan base again, and probably in Philadelphia.
Well, it surprised me when you said that you recalled the NFC title game, the origin of the Philly flop, because that was the... Yeah, there's a story that I don't think I've ever told on the radio, or I certainly have never told in public in front of people. And
no, you know,
I mean, let's just lay out the therapeutic Davenport of love right now, if only for me. It's
certainly not for the listeners at this point.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think you could speak for the vast and ever expanding listenership and the broad nature of the audience that we have here at KFAN. I mean, maybe you can speak for a few of them, but well, let's just see here. If I say the co-host of the Friday Football Feast abandoned the sweat in 2017, make noise if you know what I'm talking about.
Well, they know.
Well, that's
not. They don't need to hear it again.
So you guys listen a lot, don't you? Okay, just somebody say loudly, if I say Charch abandoned the sweat, he went down with Common and Tenneby's ship before the leaves turned, then you would know what I'm talking about. It's radio. Please make noise if you do.
They know.
So that means, well, was anybody here in lockstep with the co-host at Paul Charchian on Twitter of the Friday Football Feast? In 2017, four games into it, Dalvin Cook goes down with a debilitating knee injury. We lose him for the season. We lose at home to the Detroit Lions. We're 2-2. So I guess you all were on the same Carnival cruise line that navigated the waters by Jamaica and Turks and Caicos and Antigua. And you abandoned the sweat before the leaves turned. Because with Dalvin going down and a home loss to the Lions, which makes your team 2-2, well, then I guess make noise if all of you just quit on the team four games into it that year like Paul did. Oh, so we're talking about a different thing. Oh, I see. So somebody's duplicitous here. Uh-huh. Okay, so somebody.
Well, I'm sure the fan base after that 2-2 start, Dalvin Cook out, nobody was disgruntled here. They all believed at that moment that this team was going to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I understand.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, this also, therapeutic Davenport of love, metaphorical as it is, has been put away. It's been tucked away, okay? Because we have a dedicated, learned audience here at Buffalo Wild Wings in Maplewood. Let's try again for the Friday football. And your favorite radio station is KFAN, yes or no? And you've listened a lot, clearly, over the last 7 years. Make noise if that's the case. So you know that story about the 2-2 and Dalvin and Turks and Caicos. Make noise. Well, one part of the story that perhaps has not been shared with Dalvin and no dilemma. I mean, it's Dalvin's down. There's no dilemma for you. You're going to take a cruise. You're going to miss the Minneapolis Miracle because you're floating on waters outside of Antigua. And as we like to gently and somewhat jokingly share with the co-host, we hope that's the only miracle that you do miss in your lifetime, the Minneapolis Miracle. But you were back for the Philly flop.
I was here for that, yes.
Okay, well, what at 2-2 with Dalvin's knee mangled, Bradford lost for the year, first game.
Yeah.
A home loss to the Lions, U.S. Bank Stadium. What was your motivation to abandon the sweat? Because I've never gotten that side of the story.
Now, here's the motivation was all my group of friends all wanted to go on a cruise. And they're like, here's the date that works for us. And I looked at it and I went, okay, second round of playoffs. Yeah, I'll roll the dice. It doesn't seem likely. I'm going to put the deposit down. I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And so we booked it. And yeah. We booked it at right about now. So okay. It must have been late September, early October.
Yeah.
And at the time, that felt like a reasonable gamble to make.
And when they kept winning and winning and winning and winning and winning.
It wasn't quite like that, as I recall. Well, it seemed to like win out the rest of the year.
Yeah. Well, they did get an off week in the postseason. So, therefore, they skipped the wild card round. So, there had to be a fair share of winning.
Yeah.
You know, that. So, when you abandon the sweat, when you went down with Common and Tenabee's ship before the leaves turned, and the team just keeps earning the off week in the postseason.
Yeah.
How did you feel during that run?
A little uneasy. You know, to bring this back to here.
Yes.
We had just lost to the Lions.
Yes.
Now, this week, this team's going to face the Lions.
Yeah.
Imagine how this fan base is going to feel if the Lions win. And that's how I was feeling at this time six years ago.
Right.
When Dalvin Cook went down and the team had just lost to the Lions and they were sitting at 2-2.
Yeah.
It's going to be just like the mood will be here on Monday if the unfortunate happens and the Lions beat the Vikings.
Okay, well, in closing for the first segment, off what Paul just said, he's right. I mean, and this learned, loving fan base, very dedicated to the colors.
Very.
Just listen to the way I lay out the difference of the record after this game, win or lose, okay? Need a witness and noise if you got it in you, but there may not be any need for it. If the Vikings beat the Detroit Lions, they improve to 2-1, and it shows that the new head coach and the new regime can stay undefeated at home. So we're heading into a London game, 2-1, undefeated at home, and even though you're 3 into it, still in first place in the NFC North. Now that's with a victory. That all sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah.
If you lose this game, not only are you 1-2, you were blown out on national television to the Philadelphia Eagles, and you just lost at home to the Lions. How's that feel? So that's what I'm saying. This is such a big moment this weekend a public perception.
It is.
And a not abandoning the sweat or going down with Common and Tenabee's metaphorical ship before the leaves turn. This is a big one this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Courtesy of TimberTech and TimberTech.com, what's on deck 9 to noon includes former Minnesota Vikings linebacker Chad Greenway. He'll be here very soon. Robert Griffith, a stud, a former All-Pro safety back in the day with the Vikings. He's going to be here with Greenway at about 9:35, 9:40, plus much more during the course of the venture of the Friday football feast at Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood. Paul Charchian, Paul Allen, Jared Wells, the technical guidance. He's superb. Can I get a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen? The street team aiding us in our thrust. And your favorite radio station, I guess, is FM 100.3 KFAM. And on behalf of all of us, we thank you for that. We'll be right back. Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood, it's Chad Greenway, ladies and gentlemen, one of the great defensive players in the history of your football team at Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood, in advance of one of the better safeties in the history of this football team joining us, Robert Griffith. And this is courtesy of Grey Duck Vodka and Grey Duck Spirits. Now, the A topic into this game, at least for me, is this defensive lineman for the Lions, Aiden Hutchinson. I don't know how familiar you are with him, but I think he was taken second overall in the draft, had 3 sacks last game. But when you watch back those sacks, Wentz ran into one. There were circumstances that led to those sacks. It wasn't just like great move, spin, and then beat somebody and come in there and crush somebody. But he still got the sacks, and you still got to close on it. He hasn't practiced Wednesday and or Thursday. So if he practices today, then you'll get a designation for doubtful, questionable, probable, all that. But that could be the A topic into this game, man. And good morning.
Good morning. I think I was impressed. Anytime you get a rookie high pick, gets three sacks,
yeah.
I'd like that you broke it down and look at the circumstances of the sacks because yeah. You can fall into something pretty easy. But
right.
If you're a rookie getting three,
that's still good.
You're doing something.
Yeah, you're doing.
Means
yeah.
You're on the field full time. Means you're getting by somebody and getting position to make a play. This is a massive game. You guys are talking about in the first segment.
It is. Like, it's really important.
I hate the NFL because every game matters so much.
Yeah.
And it's just like you come off week two. You couldn't have had a more up and down 2 weeks.
Yep.
And now you get a Lions team that's going to make everything hard.
They will.
And you're probably more talented, but they're going to make everything hard and challenging. You're at home. You have to win this game because if you go hard L in Philly, back to an L against Detroit, like you guys mentioned.
At home against Detroit.
Yeah, let's go.
It's going to be demoralizing.
Circle the wagons, baby. It's the Buffalo Bills. We got to pull it off this week. Come on, brother.
Chad, this is a way harder game than people realize and Vegas realizes. Vikings are 7.5-point favorites.
Oh, that's way.
But over the
No, they're not. No, they're 5.5.
Was it down to 5? I don't know. I looked last night.
Okay, it opened at 6. It's at 5.5, right around 5.5.
All right, I'll trust you.
Where will that end? Mm-hmm.
I saw 7.5.
3.5, 4,
you know,
I think.
I don't know. I thought that when they were slight dogs against Green Bay, by game time it would flip, and it did. The point spread last week I thought was pretty fair. This week I think it's a little high, even 5.5 or minus 6 for the Vikings. But then again, injuries, I mean, Their left guard, Jonah Jackson, might not play. Ragnow, the Chan Aston kid's very dicey, but I think he'll play. Aiden Hutchinson, DeAndre Swift missed practice. That all plays into it.
Yeah. How about the Ragnow talker, though, coming back home? How fun would that be?
Yeah.
You're a kid from Chan or Chaska? I think he's Chan, right?
Yeah, Chan
Aston. Goes to nice Arkansas,
yep.
Goes to Detroit, and now he's back home for a game. That's got to be pretty cool.
I'm sure he's going to love it.
We'll wish him well in his loss.
And he's really good, too, which helps as well.
Player.
If you go back 8 games for both of these teams, the Lions have more wins, they've scored more points, and they've allowed less points. And the Vikings are the favorite. This thing is going to be way dicier than people realize.
I think you're playing the fact that it's a home game is huge. I think that obviously plays a factor in the NFL, especially when they're doing these numbers. But I do think that when you look at this game, the fact that they both played the Eagles is interesting because now you have game film direct against an opponent that you've both seen.
In back-to-back weeks, no less.
In back-to-back weeks. Right. So you have this nice game film to work off of.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a disadvantage, I think, to us because with the staff of only having 2 football games, now you have a common opponent within those 2 games.
Right.
So I'm interested to see how our players, yes, of course, but I'm really interested to see how the staff reacts. You go out to Philly, you get every chance to go in there and be competitive in that game. And we fumbled it and turned it over and threw it away. And we made plays in that second half and just could not get over the hump. And thankfully, like I said last week, the Eagles don't have a passing game. So I said that last week. I looked up. He was 10 for 10 for 153, 12 minutes into the game. And so the point is how will our staff react? Can we put ourselves in position, especially in that first quarter, to get a lead?
Cam Dantzler got benched midway through the game, third, fourth quarter
fun.
Of the game. What do you think about what do you think about coaches who do that? And the circumstance, I'm sure you've seen it many times.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on taking a starter out of the game? And what do you think about this one in particular?
Well, it happens because it needs to happen, mm-hmm. right? So
nobody wants that to go down.
It's either too many mental breaks or obviously too many physical breaks. And I think the issue there, especially that position, is confidence. When you're playing corner, you're on an island, and you have to be confident, mm-hmm. superbly confident. Probably more than, other than the quarterback position, probably the next most important position from a confidence standpoint. When you pull a kid out, that can really be hard on those guys and to damage what they think they're going to walk up and press somebody and say, I'm going to knock this guy down.
Right.
So, to me, that means, I'd have to watch back, but I'd like to see if that's more mental or more physical. And if he's just making too many mental errors, then you got to pull him off because he's hurt the team.
The Quez Watkins, I think it was right after the big Quez Watkins bomb, and that went by him. I mean, it's not like physically he can't run with Quez Watkins. And
right.
You can't cover Quez
Watkins.
Well,
you may be getting asked to put contact on a receiver and push him outside, push him for some help. So you just don't know exactly the circumstances.
He was flat-footed. I mean, he was flat-footed so many times where little threes became eights and little fives became 11s.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, he was just flat-footed in diagnosing quick twitch what is required to handle this run-pass option. you know, and then I haven't had this told to me, and you know, I'm going to take the leap that if you're flat-footed, you don't know what's coming.
Right.
Which means then the next layer is going to be, potentially, you didn't put in requisite time,
yep,
study-wise, to know what's coming. And that laziness is going to get somebody benched.
Well, and I think what I like is, rather than having a guy just get beat over and over again,
yeah,
I, you know, from the coaching standpoint, go make the change and let somebody else have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, this is about winning. This is about finding a way to get, yeah, a W. And I think in that second half, we just kept trying to find ways to get back in the game, and we kept screwing it up. But,
yeah,
at that point, you go try to win the game. And I love the fact that we're going to be aggressive and say, we're not going to let this thing play out. Let's try to make a change now.
Yeah. That's Chad Greenway with Grey Duck Vodka and Grey Duck Spirits. And when we return from an elongated break, that includes the thoughts of Minnesota Vikings associate head coach Mike Pettine coming up around the corner with the Vikes Report. We believe former safety Robert Griffith. He's a two-time All-Pro. Played 13 years in the NFL. I believe 8 were with the Minnesota Vikings. He's going to be nice enough to stop by Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood, and we'll have two great defensive players from down memory lane. We go to chat about the Vikings and some things from Vikings days gone by. We are feasting at Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood. It is the Friday football. Give it to me.
Time now for the Vikings Report on The Fan, presented by the Minnesota Lottery. Vikings assistant coach Mike Pettine joins PA after this from the Minnesota Lottery.
Back to the Friday football feast at Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood momentarily. Meanwhile, associate head coach, former head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, joins us now as he does each and every day via the Vikings Report. And this is a division game. And obviously division games are super important to win. You're 1-0 in the division. And the Lions, I mean, this doesn't seem to be like our older brothers Lions, where there's some pushover to a winless team. This is a tough team, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you saw kind of signs of that towards the end of last year when things really started to come together for them. And they carried that momentum into the offseason, and it's certainly showed up in their first two games. I mean, offensively, they're playing extremely well, you know, averaging 35 points a game, 400 yards total offense, but I think the key is they're running the ball really well. You know, you're looking at over 180 yards rushing a game. They're running it well. That sets up their play action. So they really are, you know, in sync on offense this early in the year, which is impressive.
Well, when it comes to the Vikings and mixing things up early in downs, and you've talked about this before, likewise with Kevin O'Connell, where to make the third downs manageable, you got to do well on first and second. And obviously, you know, Dalvin Cook busting loose, that could only help things with the play action. But the importance of handling offense early in the sequence, first and second down. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think that's a hidden statistic. Is a lot of people just want to look at third down conversions, and the distance to go, I think, is a huge factor. So you always want to have a very high average yards to go on third down, which means that you're doing well on first and second down. It's if you're losing early downs. I mean, it's easy statistics that third and 2-3 are going to be converted a heck of a lot more than third and, you know, 9-10.
Last one, Mike, for the week, and thank you very much for the time. In the cliched copycat league, and I'm not a learned football mind enough to know exactly what Philadelphia did to potentially take away the home run ball with Justin Jefferson. But if it's a copycat league, is it fair to say that not only in this game, but moving forward, to expect similar looks, and subsequently our team would have to get around it?
Yeah, I always think there's some degree of that you're going to look at how other teams defended somebody. But if you're not equipped to do that personnel wise, I mean, I think Philly had it was a good blend of the rush combined with the coverage and some opportunistic pressures. So if you're built to do that, it's a lot easier to copy it. But we always feel like if something hurt us in a game that whether or not the upcoming opponent does it or not, we need to make sure we practice it to make sure that problem is fixed, because more likely than not, you're going to get some variation.
Yeah, the Fan.
The Viking.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, Robert Griffith, one of the great safeties and defensive players in the history of Minnesota Vikings football.
Nice.
Nice enough to come by Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood to amplify the feast. And he's here as part of Legends Weekend, where 90-plus guys have returned to the Twin Cities for festivities and fun over the weekend. And Robert is always very gracious and always very good when it comes to coming back and doing stuff like that, man. It's, you know, 13 years in the NFL, 8 with the Vikings, and you're the first 8 in the NFL with this team. But you went other places after that, and you live last check, Southern California, of the San Diego area. So what continually brings you back to Minnesota?
Oh man, this is the people. I mean, the fans.
Sweet.
It sounds cliche and all that, but it's really the truth. I live in Los Angeles, so I'm right next to LAX. So I'm with a lot of California people, and it's different.
Yeah, they're phonies. That's what that's all about. We're real people here.
Yeah.
True. Really, really true. But when I get off the plane, the air, I remember what the air smells like.
Mm-hmm.
The grass. Right? It's different.
Well, if you live next to an airport, you're used to waking up to jet fuel and the smell of urine cakes. And if you're over there by LAX, you're in Torrance territory, which means you're right by the 405.
Right.
Which means, like, trying to get anywhere over the course of, trying to get 4 miles in 5 hours, that's a challenge.
100%.
So welcome home to the land of milk and honey, ladies and gentlemen.
Indeed.
Robert Griffith has come home.
Yeah.
Hey,
weird he doesn't visit in December.
Right. Yeah, get here now.
Yeah, T-West, how come this Legends Weekend ain't in December? Let's really test the mettle of the legend,
exactly.
You know?
That's right.
Either one of you, let's begin here. Then Paul wants to talk some HOF stuff.
I do. I want to hit you with all the Hall of Famers you played. I'm excited for that.
But for games against the Lions, the Detroit Lions, like Chad Greenway had an interception against the Detroit Lions that got the team down inside the 10 or right around the 10, you know, the 10 where you're about ready to roll in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somehow at the end of that drive, we punted.
Yeah, that's a true story.
So there are moments like that.
It was the last pick of my career, I think, and it ended like that. It was perfect.
Was it really?
Yep.
But for you, back in the day, playing at the Silver Dome, and I've been to the Silver Dome one time against the Silver Stretch and Barry Sanders and everything, man. What were your games against the Lions like, Robert?
I just remember Barry.
What about Herman Moore?
Yeah. Well, Herman too, but more Barry. Barry was the whole team. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being up at night and everybody having this stress on their brain about staying in their damn gap, right?
Right.
You know, everybody had to stay in their gaps to the sideline. That was the whole Barry drill we did, the long whistle.
Yep.
And sure enough, I remember we kept Barry to 16 yards in one half.
Wow.
And so we weren't pumping our chest at halftime. We knew that, you know, he was still Barry. And then he came out and ran for 157
yards. Unbelievable.
In the second half.
Yeah.
It's Barry.
And you guys won, right?
We did win.
Yeah.
That's a Barry Sanders career right there. I ran for 160 yards and we lost. Right.
In the locker room, it's all about just do not get on his highlight tape. Like, don't get on.
I was just going to say.
Like,
exactly.
When he's going into the Hall of Fame,
when you
watch the highlight tape in 20 years about Barry Sanders, which everybody still does, that dang YouTube come back and get you. There he is, Robert Griffith, making a present.
100%. And everybody remembers Harlan Barnett when he was with the Patriots, from him spinning them around.
Oh,
right?
Yep.
That's
Everybody remembers Harlan Barnett, right?
Yeah. But we would run across guys like that, and you say, just don't get juked out of your drawer.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that was it.
Well, that was kind of like Monday night. Right. I don't know if you watched the Monday night game. I know you stay in touch with the team and watch most, if not all, games. But isn't when you go against a run-pass offense, when you go against, like, Mike Vick back in the day, but now Jalen Hurts, Barry Sanders, is you're thinking about that a little bit. Is he going to give it to Miles Sanders? Holy cow, he didn't. I remember this from practice. Wow. He just shook on me and broke my ankles, man.
The key is he's in that position because he's better than you at that.
Yeah.
So the key is just to go fast and hard right through the knee and just see what happens. And if you miss, because he's going to go down.
Uh-huh.
And if you miss, make him hop so your buddy can get there. But,
yeah,
man, I mean,
it.
you just take a shot, and if you try to sit there and square up with him, it's over, and then you're on his highlight tape forever.
He's saying exactly what every coach tells people. Yes. You got to shoot your shot.
But then mentally, sometimes you get stuck. You're like, oh, no.
Oh, man.
You're in the headlights.
Last one before the next topic, which is more of an enterprising topic involving the Hall of Fame. Kevin O'Connell, San Diego State University.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Griffith, San Diego State University. Obviously, different ages, different years. I think he's from the Carlsbad area.
Yeah, he actually used to throw for us.
When
I was playing, he was coming out of high school, and so when I worked out in off season, Kevin was actually there.
Wow.
Great quarterback. I thought he was going to be stay a lot longer as a player. But football mind, always hardworking guy.
Mm-hmm.
Was always the first guy out there throwing the receivers. I'm not surprised that he's here and doing well.
I've got you had a long career during a time where there were a lot of great Vikings. Mm-hmm. I've identified 5, 6 Hall of Famers that you interacted with in your time in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Give me just some of your quick thoughts on these guys as I bring them up. First, Warren Moon, early in your career. Give me some of your memories of Warren Moon.
Okay, Warren Moon is a big brother to me. So when I got here, he had a TV show. I think it was on Fox or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from San Diego. Didn't have a jacket. Mm. It was cold. So I went on his show.
He had a TV show.
He had a show on Fox or something my rookie year.
Yep.
And to go on the show, you got a Letterman's jacket, right? So I went on the show and finally got me a jacket that I can wear.
that was your Minnesota jacket.
Yeah.
I've never got a Letterman's jacket from the show.
I'll go through. Warren Moon, when I remember Warren, is a true gentleman. Best football, best football thrown mm-hmm. that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Best ball.
Yeah,
he throws the best ball, and just a real emphatic leader, like a quiet, I'm gonna go out and do my job. Everybody get behind me, kind of guy.
All right, next we're talking to Robert Griffith. Your memories of Chris Carter.
Woo. Okay. So Chris was more like the brother.
That was deep.
That big there.
Yeah, well, Chris and I were, we were captains together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have the same agent.
And Chris can be tricky. I mean, it's fair to say that. I love Chris, man, but, Randy can be tricky, too.
Chris was, Chris is still, we had the same agent, but Chris was the pressure for me to perform was really from Chris.
Yeah.
Mm.
Quietly.
Yeah.
You know, it was just this thing.
Competitively.
I had
practice.
To play well. I knew he was going to play well, so I had to play well.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it was Chris was always the brother that pissed you off.
Yeah.
It's no secret. Everybody knows that Chris rubbed people the wrong way a lot of times, but you had to take it the right way. And I think he rubbed a lot of guys the wrong way. But then we respected the fact that he backed it up.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's
you know, with,
that's everything.
With Chris HOF, but when it comes to the sideline, when it comes to the boundary,
it's
best toe tapping, strong hands, boundary catcher. You know, it's like Jordy Nelson when he played for the Green Bay Packers. It's like I would watch him do that stuff so much. I was like, wow. I mean, Jordy's like the best sideline receiver that I had seen since Chris Carter, who I would think is the best in the history of the game. Would you?
Yes.
Yeah.
When you see his elbows, I don't know if you, next time you see Chris in person, go look at his elbows.
Look at his elbows. Hey, Chris, guys, see your elbows?
Oh, man. Yeah.
And the body control it takes to do that, too.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Makes it look so easy.
His hands were incredible. I mean.
All right. Let me give you another one. While we're talking Viking Hall of Fame wide receivers, let's transition to Randy Moss. Oh, yeah. What are your memories of Randy Moss?
Randy was the fastest player I've seen on the field.
Yeah.
Fast and big.
Dion and then Randy.
Yeah.
1 and 2. 1A, 1B. You pick whoever.
Yeah.
You remember the rookie year, of course. You don't know what you're in for necessarily, and he shows up as a rookie in that training camp. He was just torching you guys.
Yeah, well, let me tell you my first thoughts of Randy. When he showed up, I was like, who's this basketball player?
Yeah.
Right? Showed up.
Right.
I immediately said, oh, he's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
That was the first thought that went to my head. I was like, this kid's going to get hurt, man. I figured my thoughts were he's not eating right. He's not working out.
Yeah.
Blah, I go through all the stuff.
Judgment.
Like a marshal. He's not going to be able to do that against us. Well, The first practice, we went one-on-one. I was like, whoo. Nobody's covering this kid.
Really?
Yes.
So what was it? Was it just the size and the speed?
Speed. And once people felt the speed, now all the comeback routes, all the curls, he was just making everybody look stupid.
Yeah, crazy. Did you ever play basketball against him?
No, but we did play. So we do have some incredible basketball stories. Matthew Hatchett.
Yeah. Dwayne Bates.
Bates. Dwayne Rudd. And these are all guys that can jump out the gym. Chris Carter.
Yep.
Moss. So they used to go over to, God, what's the gym?
In Eden Prairie?
Yeah, in Eden Prairie.
Yeah, right. Flagship.
Flagship.
Oh, yep.
Used to go to Flagship on Tuesdays and play. And
right, in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then, like, businessman guy would roll in, try to get in the
take
game.
Take his suit off.
Hey. Right. Right. So you got Randy Moss,
awesome.
Whatever, West Virginia's Mr. Basketball.
Yeah.
And Chris Carter, Ohio Mr. Basketball.
Yeah.
Dwayne Rudd, Mississippi. I mean.
Crazy athletes, too.
And let me segue. So I have my foundation. Every year I had a weekend in San Diego. And so I had, it was a long week. It was a golf tournament, basketball game, dunk contest. You know, we had a concert, comedy shows, like 3 days.
Did you have Sinbad?
I did have Sinbad.
You did not?
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow. That was, wow. 50
yeah.
to 1.
Wow, yeah, well, okay. Yeah, that's a 50,000
to 1.
It
was either Sinbad or Martin Lawrence.
Kevin Hart, D.O. Ely, all those guys. And so in the celebrity basketball game, on those teams were Chris Carter, Robert Smith, Dwayne Rudd, Terrell Owens, Rodney Harrison. I mean, it was just literally, the game was so competitive. Like, everybody keeps telling me that is the most competitive celebrity game they've ever had. But so I guess what I'm getting to is that these guys were not just great football players. I mean, these guys were the best at basketball, baseball, and then Randy. And I'm getting to Randy. I'm going to tell you one more story. At Gage Hall, okay, it was maybe 102, 103 degrees. We're all in the pool. 90 guys in the swimming pool. You know the pool there,
yeah,
right?
Oh yeah.
We're all in the pool. Robert Smith gets out, goes on the little spring, does, you know, bouncing up and down, does a flip.
Diving board?
Diving board.
Diving board.
Does a flip in the water. Moss gets up, goes to the board, boing, 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 double flip, no splash.
No way.
Go, like straight down like the Olympics.
You went Greg Louganis on you. Yeah.
Go ask somebody.
Wow.
We go, Randy, like, where did you learn how to do this? YMCA or boys club, something after school.
In Rand, West Virginia.
In Rand, West Virginia. He was like 12 or something.
Wow, no splash.
Those are the kind of athletes that were around. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry. All these stories.
No, it's great. A couple more Hall of Famers that you interacted with. We're talking to Robert Griffith. Randall McDaniel.
Oh, man. The best to ever do it.
Yeah.
I mean, who's better than Randall?
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think he is. He's definitely in the conversation.
Why did
name
he
one
have,
other guy.
But why did he have that weird stance? I mean, we always joke about it, and Randall, it's like football immortality, but I don't think I've ever asked him, well, why did you actually do it that way?
I don't know all the specifics, but it was an injury that he had, and he couldn't put it down the right
with
way.
The foot down right,
so he had to do it.
I think we get him on the
sideways.
Show.
Yeah, I'd love that.
That's a question you need to ask, but I think that's the answer.
HOF.
Yeah. All right, I got another one for you. John Randall, Hall of Famer.
So this is a little bit more personal for me. So I would not have the career that I had without John. I swear. We're playing 10-on-9 every snap.
Yeah.
Johnny Randall got double teamed every snap.
Yep.
Say it with me.
Every snap.
It's still HOF.
Every
football.
Snap. I'm saying it so matter-of-factly because I was the free hitter or the free tackler.
Yeah.
You know how that works.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fullback, he'll take on the fullback and I'll be the guy who make the tackle. Well, Johnny, because he had the double team, I can see each play before it happened. Counters, all that. I can see. So when people say, oh, Griff, it looked like you were blitzing. No, I could just see that Johnny was getting double every snap.
Yeah.
And so my career, I owe a lot to Johnny because I was playing behind him.
Make the numbers look
good.
I
had 100 tackles every year because of Johnny Randall.
Yep.
Hey, well, I mean, just in common thread-like fashion, outside of that, you know, you're on that 98 team, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, you got one loss. It's at the Bucks.
Yep.
All Stott and Warrick Dunn doing their thing. And, you know, there was a special teams problem, I think, that got them down deep, and they eventually win the game. But you lose to the Falcons at Metrodome in the 98 NFC title game. Chad is on the 2009 Vikings. They go 12-4. They start getting a little goofy at the end of the year, losing like at Charlotte and at the Bears on Monday Night Football. But nevertheless, just in my, you know, coming up on 30 years living here, those are the two best teams. It's not even close. And just the two coolest teams, too. My first year moving here full-time was 98. And I was a guy without a team, man. Calling races in Northern California from Washington, D.C., went to RFK, Billy Kilmer this, Dyron Talbert that.
Oh, wow.
But then I've been all over the place. I was a kid without a team, man. I fell in love with your team. So then calling the games in 09, Favre rolls in here, man, and I'd never met Brett. And I probably had 15 minutes of conversation with him the entire year, but just watching him and just hearing things he would do that nobody else was ever doing, to learn how to beat stuff and then watching it happen. But they get to the Superdome, and, you know, Bounty Gate, of course, had something to do with this, but they lose and they miss the Super Bowl by an inch. So, and both Super Bowls were set to be in Miami, which is a common threat. So, Robert, I'll begin with you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, like, when somebody brings it up or you think about it or you're watching NFL Network and you see something, does it ever leave your football-loving soul? Do you ever just forget it and move forward?
You have to. I mean, after a certain amount of years, it just gets put into a spot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's it's a spot that
the football lake of fire.
Yeah, wherever you want to put it. So it doesn't bother me anymore. Because I know I can't do anything about it, but more importantly, it's just.
But you never won a Super Bowl.
Never won
and
a Super Bowl.
And you played 13 years to do that, and so did you.
And I never even went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And that's the thing. I didn't have a chance to actually show, you know, be one of the best players in the best game.
Yeah.
And that was the key for me, is. Would I have wanted to go to the Super Bowl and lose? No, of course not. But going would have been so significant for us.
09 for you, man.
Yeah, I mean, you put that, I can remember running out of the tunnel and that the electric environment. I mean, it was just a different feel, different vibe. I mean, it was crazy in the Superdome. The volume of the Superdome, you'll never forget. And then just to be in that game and be at the end and say, we're one play away. And then to not be able to make that play and not be able to make that kick and then not be able to win the game in overtime, it just eats at you. But then I look at it from the other perspective of that was the biggest game that I ever played in my life. And when you start in nine-man football in South Dakota and you make it to the Superdome, one game away from immortality and going to the Super Bowl, it's like I don't look at it as a negative. I look at it as look how far I made it.
Yes.
And it was incredible. To play in that game. Now, again, to play 11, so 22 years between us and 24 years between us and no Super Bowls.
Yeah.
That sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, well, we were the fans who lived all 24.
Think about this. I mean, Vikings wide receivers coach, and you played against him, Robert, Keenan McCardell.
Oh, yes.
You know, you played against him when he came in with Cleveland, then with Jacksonville with Coughlin. Well, Keenan McCardell, you know, he played in the league close to 20 years, feels like 18, 17. So he goes to the Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, catches two passes, they're both touchdowns.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And he's not the MVP, which still trips Dexter Jackson, I think, is the one who won it. Dexter,
he won it. He had a pick to the house, though.
Right, well, great. Well, Keenan caught two.
I'm always for the defenders.
That's a defensive player for
us. I'm talking to Keenan, I'm like,
Larry Brown
bro,
got one
what
too.
More can you do? You're blocking well for Warrick Dunn, and the two come your way, both in the end zone, and you bring them both in.
I got one more quick Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Tony Dungy, you came in and he was your defensive coordinator, Hall of Fame coach.
Tony.
Yeah, talk us a little bit about Tony Dungy.
Yeah, so Tony was my first NFL coach, right? So when I got here, he was the coordinator. So I had him for 94 and 95, and we were the best defense in it. Well, one of them.
Yeah.
Let me back up. 94 we were. So it was the lowest rushing total that for 40 years at the time. That
wow.
year. We had like,
wow.
We're keeping guys like 50 yards a game.
Wow.
Total. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And I remember the structure so strong. Tony was just like, nope, we don't do it like that. It was just this thing where you're wrong. Everybody, you know, it was. Yep. Johnny, you're not in your gap. It was just so
matter of fact. This is how it is.
That's why Tony's defenses played well. You had to be accountable, and so that's what I learned. And it was a good way for me to start because
I bet
I really knew how bad it was when I went somewhere else.
Yeah. And my first coordinator was Mike Tomlin.
Yep.
Another
yeah,
wow.
No yeah. kidding.
I only had him for 1 year, and I didn't even play for him.
Yeah, but you know what?
A lot of similarities.
But you know what? Leslie Frazier is the Tony Dungy tree.
Unbelievable.
And you know,
same tree.
And just looking at the generational shift with coaches, and I discussed this on the radio the last couple of days, is Kevin O'Connell is same generation with Matt LaFleur, coach of the Packers, and Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator. Right. They were together, O'Connell and Barry, with the L.A. Rams in 2020. Mm-hmm. All right, well, Kevin, you know, and his staff, they handled them. Okay, now the next week, Nick Sirianni, Jonathan Gannon, a former coach here with the Vikings when you were on the team. Well, that same generation with O'Connell, and Gannon is in his second year as a defensive coordinator. We go there and we get handled.
Yep.
So now next week, it's just coming. It's coming at teams week after week. Mm-hmm. Dan Campbell, coach of the Lions. Well, that same generation. Their offensive coordinator Ben Johnson's 36 years old. It's his first coordinating job. This is all same generation.
Yep.
What I'm getting at here is God bless Tony Dungy and Leslie Frazier. Because of everything I'm hearing about how coaches need to be now in this generation of human being and this generation of 20-some-odd-year-old, specifically post-pandemic and stuff like that, well, Tony and Leslie were that before everybody now is being told to look people in the eyes and collaborate. And, you know, you got to say three good things like, hey, really good job here, really good job there. Hey, you know, that was fantastic, too. Right. By the way, can you fix this?
Yep.
What we've talked about for 3 weeks. Can you please fix this? Well, that's just how you got to treat to a certain extent. And Tony and Leslie got that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, into the pandemic, man, very few people that I formulated this opinion to, and I think Chad was one. And I'm like, Bill Parcells, Frank Kush, Woody Hayes, those are the last coaches that these players want right now.
Yes.
You know, when they got to stay in their apartments and test of 5 to 7 days a week.
They'll take advantage of it.
So you bring up Tony, man, and I wanted to amplify it with Leslie. They were that then and still are that now.
But still having that level of accountability you talk about, right? There's a way for them to do that and manage and collaborate, but still, like, this is how we do it.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm so happy that Leslie's doing so well in Buffalo. I mean, it's just because he's a guy that deserves to do well. Mm-hmm. You know, I love when the good guys
people get rewarded.
When get rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, man, great seeing you. Welcome back. Enjoy
Always
Legends
pleasure.
Weekend. Tommy West, thank you very much. Lewiston, go crazy.
T-Dub.
Robert Griffith and Chad Greenway, what an honor and a treat that was, man. That was fantastic.
Thanks for having me, guys.
HOF stories and everything. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for your grace. And we'll be right back to Buffalo Wild Wings Maplewood. You're listening to your home for Vikings football.